Leads with the fourth case of the day, Singer versus Pierce and Associates.
Counsel, I'm Dan Edelman representing Louisiana Singer. The defendant Pierce brought a foreclosure case against Ms. Singer on behalf of his client. In the course of the foreclosure, he presented his fees to the state court judge as part of the order allowing foreclosure, finding a default, and directing a sale of the property. Judge Schiller awarded him $1,100 fees and $908 in expenses. That was for the entire case through the judgment confirming the sale, which was to take place in the future. It is, in fact, the amount which Pierce has agreed with Fannie Mae to take for an entire foreclosure case.
Now, didn't the state court later vacate that order?
That is correct, under extremely dubious circumstances.
Well, but be that as it may, it did vacate the order. Why are we to look into the circumstances?
Because while the order was still in effect, Pierce obtained more money than Judge Schiller had awarded, at least $566 more. This takes place because under state law, Ms. Singer has a right to sell the property and avoid the foreclosure sale.
Why is this court the right place? If there has been some offense done to an order entered by the state court, which I'm not sure if that's happened or not, but let's assume, as you suggest, that it has, why are we the ones to fix that problem?
Because the matter is specifically regulated by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which prohibits the collection of any amount, including fees and expenses, incidental to principal obligation, unless such amount is expressly authorized by the agreement creating the debt or permitted by law.
Well, this is the argument that your opponents say you've waived, that you didn't make this, you didn't put this weight on the word amount in the lower court. And of course, there is an agreement between these two parties that attorney's fees will be part of the consequences of default, which is quite routine, actually, in contracts.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so, in your view, everyone with a contract like that now has to go to a state court to get a court order before they can get attorney's fees?
Well, I think that the amount has to be liquidated. One of our contentions
is liquidated. Well, that's what I mean. Okay, so of course you're going to be very busy. If they have to open up for all contractual arrangements that allow attorney's fees to be awarded upon default?
First, this only applies to consumer cases.
Well, okay. There aren't very many consumers in our society, so I guess they won't be so busy, huh?
Second, the only instance in which there isn't a court available to deal with the matter is if some small amount is incurred sending out a demand letter.
Well, why would you accept that?
I'm sorry?
Why not that, too? Why not 15 cents?
I mean, it's de minimis, and chances are if the court makes it clear that you can't do it, the creditor is simply going to absorb that as a cost of doing business. And second, because
you're basically saying it's unenforceable to put in a contractual arrangement between A and B a provision that says if B defaults upon payments to A, in addition to making the default good, attorney's fees will be part of what B now owes to A.
The FDCPA requires liquidation in some amount.
Did the FDCPA say you can't have a contract with somebody?
You can't.
That says attorney's fees.
Because it requires an amount.
Well, I mean, the cases that you rely on don't say that. I mean, they all arise out of different circumstances, and I'm just concerned about imposing such a vast new requirement on contractual arrangements between parties.
I don't think it's a vast new requirement. If there's a provision for reasonable attorney's fees and the matter goes to court, it's going to be addressed in the judgment. I think it has to be. The only gap would be a case where essentially the attorney sends a demand letter and the debt is paid, and some minor amount of fees is incurred. Now, state law, in some cases, does handle that situation, and the agreement could handle the situation by providing some modest amount under those circumstances.
Well, why isn't that exactly what we have here? The case gets dismissed because a couple of days before the foreclosure, there's a sale, it's like a settlement. You know, everybody goes off and solves the problem.
It's not a settlement. Ms. Singer gets nothing for the extra money. No extra work was performed by Pierce.
Well, we don't know that, but anyway.
Well, yeah. It's an emotion to dismiss. We allege what the $1,100 is for and where it came from, and he did not have to have the sale. He did not have to confirm the sale. He just deposited a check in his account. So I think that has to be resolved in favor of Ms. Singer. Regardless, I don't even think you have to go that far, Your Honor, because I think that when the debt collector does submit the amount to the court for its determination, and the court makes the determination, that's the amount of reasonable attorney's fees.
The court has vacated its order?
If the court were to award more money, that's one thing. But here, what happened is that a month after all this takes place, an associate shows up, hands up an order, basically saying the debtor is paid, the debt in full, case is to be dismissed, and then throws in all prior orders are vacated. I do not think that Judge Schiller meant to thereby award an increased amount of fees and expenses. That's certainly not how one would go about it, and we allege that he was not told anything about increased expenses. Regardless, I think if the court does wish to address the broader question, I think it's controlled by Veach and Shula. Shula holds that a debtor does not owe court costs, part of which was at issue here, unless they're either awarded or stipulated to. You need some sort of an order or the equivalent of an order before they become part of a debt, even though there's a statute which generally authorizes court costs. A contract or a statute generally authorizing reasonable attorney's fees does not specify an amount. It is not a liquidation.
What about the Shapiro case out of the Second Circuit?
The Shapiro case did not involve this particular issue. The only challenge, from what I can tell from the opinion that was affirmed, was that the amount was unreasonable and the court rejected it.
Well, I said that the attempt to collect attorney fees doesn't violate the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act.
But you have to look in the context of what was raised, and I believe the only challenge was that it was unreasonable. I should also point out that the state laws on these issues vary. We do point out some state laws which do liquidate attorney's fees within the meaning of contract providing for reasonable attorney's fees. And that could easily be done here. And in fact, the new predatory mortgage law in Illinois addresses the subject of pre-suit attorney's fees and allows a small amount. Unless Your Honors have some other questions, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Edmund. Mr. Schultz.
Please, the court. Counselor. Your Honor, you're just asking about the Shapiro case, and I believe that's the one that's most closely on point. It's not correct that the only issue in Shapiro was the reasonableness of the fees. On page 64 and 351, that third, the court says the issues on appeal are whether the $98 charge was expressly allowed by the agreement, and, if so, whether the inclusion of the charge in the letter was a false representation because the charge was unreasonable. They did consider whether or not it was appropriate to seek recovery of that amount under the contract. In that case, there was an agreement that provided that if this matter goes to collection, you are required to pay reasonable fees. It went to collection. They asked for fees, and a Fair Debt case was filed like this under the same section, and the court said it was acceptable to conduct a manner and not a violation of the FDCPA to seek these items. Shula, the main case they cite and rely on, have a fundamental difference. Shula, the Veach case, and the Bernstein case all had a provision where the attorney was doing something contravention of either the contract or the law. In Veach, the lawyer said at the initial communication that you owe treble damages. As Judge Posner pointed out, as the court pointed out, that was something up to the court's discretion. So it was not a correct statement to say that that was owed at that time. Similarly, in Shula, the lawyer said that you owe costs. And Judge Posner pointed out that those costs were a matter of discretion.
It's a matter of a small loan, but he pronounces his name Posner.
Posner, he pointed out, and he cited two sections, one of the Illinois Collection Agency Act and one of the Code of Civil Procedure, in the opinion, saying these are matters for the courts to decide. They were not owed at that time. Similarly, in Bernstein, the other case that's relied upon, a magistrate judge opinion, the contract that was at issue, a credit card agreement, said that the person could be liable for fees if it goes to litigation. The lawyer sent a letter seeking fees if it had not gone to litigation, and the court said that was a violation of the agreement. Those are fundamental differences from this case.
Your position is that if the some amount that's due can, without distinction, include the debt and attorney fees sending it out, and that you don't see any violation there. Without distinction, what's what?
I did not see a distinction in that. Matter of fact, I believe it was in the Bernstein and the Shula case that the court pointed out that it was not considered a violation to have lumped this as a request for reasonable fees and costs. They both pointed that out.
So what would be the vehicle for challenging the reasonableness of fees under your view? I mean, obviously, sure. If under Mr. Edelman's view, you have to go to the court, there's a forum there, the court can decide whether any given amount of fees falls within that realm of reasonableness.
Well, there's a number of vehicles. If you are in court proceeding, if the person objects to those fees upon request, they can go to court and bring a motion and seek relief from Judge Shiller if it happens to be. In my experience, my client's experience tells me that when there are questions about the fees, oftentimes these are things that are negotiated. That's just normal practice. But as the court points out, you know, the biggest numbers of consumer debts are going to be the mortgage, the credit card, and medical bills. And those overwhelmingly have provisions similar to this. And to require, when they say if you can get reasonable fees to go to collection, to require every time, whether they're in litigation or not, that provision in the agreement to have effect, the lawyer must go to court, file proceedings, it's not required by law, it's not required by contract,
well,
and it makes no sense.
I see a difference, though, between separating the fees from the debt itself or the contract.
Well, courts have made that point in connection with the 1692G violation, and that was what it was at issue in the Miller-McCullough case, for instance, where they talked about you got to specify the debt amount. That's a G violation because in G it has to do with the first communication and is a requirement of debt. Identify the debt. And the courts have said you have to be specific amount as to that amount. There's been a flurry of cases, Chue, Taylor, and Olson within the last 3 months by this court, and I don't think they've said that you have to break it down necessarily by interest, by fees, by cost, by principal. They have not said that. What they have said in connection with the G violation is you have to state an amount, be specific, and that has to be an accurate amount. That's what this court has said.
I know, but I don't know if we, whether the matter of lumping attorney fees in there has been an issue in those cases.
Well,
I know we said you have to state an amount. I mean, that's clear. I just don't know.
And, of course, this case, I mean, you're saying if it's not in litigation, I suppose we can imagine a case where, you know, a request goes out and let's suppose it's even broken down. Here's the amount of your underlying debt and here's the amount of the attorney's fees or whatever. But this case was in litigation. There was an order, and so there's something particularly noticeable, at least, about the fact that the fees that were requested and paid were $570 more than the amount the court had ordered.
566, I believe. Yeah.
Whatever, number like that, yeah.
The court notes that the amount awarded was at the time of the judgment. That was, as referenced by plaintiff's documents, February 7th. We also note that there was a sale scheduled on May 10th. And those, it's a bit outside the record, but I'll tell you, and the court knows, that you have to go to publication. There's further title then you had to go to cancellation of sale. Those are charges. Those are charges. Those things are, it's not unexpected, it's not uncommon for that to occur. If there's a dispute, though, they did have a vehicle to pursue it. And if I may just get back to your question in connection with the Veach opinion, the court says, we agree with Veach that Sheeks incorrectly stated the amount of debt, but not because he specified indeterminate attorney fees and court costs. And that's similarly stated again in the Bernstein case. They comment on that thought, and that way of presentation.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what that means, because does that mean that she didn't state any attorney fees, or I mean any specific amount of attorney fees, or it was lumped in with the amount of the debt?
In that case,
yeah.
In particular? There was a statement of the treble damages, specifically of $1,050, then it was a statement of reasonable fees and costs.
Set out of the amount.
I don't recall.
Or just added it.
Presented that
manner. That's my concern anyway. That when you state a sum certain with regard to the debt, many debtors aren't going to understand whether it's they're going to say maybe not know what their total is due.
That's an interesting argument. It's not the one before the court though. The court here is the question of whether or not it was required to go to whether or not my client was required to go to court to obtain approval.
I understand that, but if we make law in this area, it's going to have to apply not only to circumstances with regard to whether the case is pending in court and how those fees were handled, but what to do about separating the attorney's fees from...
There's many statutes that talk about allowing reasonable fees. That Fair Debt Collection Practices Act.
Sure, no, I don't have a problem with that, and I don't have a problem with sending a letter out if it's not in litigation saying what you think reasonable fees are. But
right.
Once it's in litigation, it makes it differently. But if we're going to try to find some way to state this rule, we've got to consider this.
I'm not sure you have to get to that rule in this case. I mean, the question under these contracts, did you have to go to get court approval? That's what's going to be decided. Did you have to go to court for approval? There are many statutes that allow reasonable fees and costs. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act allows reasonable fees and costs.
Well, for example, we could say, no, you don't have to go to court, but you have to set it out separately from the debt.
Well, I would say that that's not required by contract, not required by statute that I'm aware of, and certainly not the ones that we're dealing with here.
Or we could say you got to go to court every time. Do you like that better?
Well, no, I would not like that better. But for instance, though, half the states in this country, 25 states in this country, are non-judicial foreclosure states. This is a contract, as Mr. Edelman points out, it's a common contract. If we're going to impose a requirement that you must go to court under these contracts to enforce these rights, that interpretation of a fairly uniform contract would be unmanageable, unworkable, could not be done in half the states in the country. It just does not proceed in that manner. But if I get back to just briefly on the Fair Debt Collection, it's interesting to me that the Act allows the plaintiff who's successful or not successful to get reasonable fees and costs. And we handle hundreds of these cases. Mr. Edelman doesn't have to go to court to get an order approving those reasonable fees and costs. It's something by negotiation. It's something that's allowed many contracts like that, many statutes like that. I think we'd be imposing a burden not required by any of the cases cited by plaintiffs. Not required by the precedent of this court, contrary to the closest precedent, which is the Second Circuit in Shapiro, and a significant burden on the courts and the attorneys and the parties. And that's just going to increase costs. It's ironic to me that they're proposing something that's going to increase to the consumer costs. That does not make sense. And the burden. You're going to extend these matters out. You're able to give to Judge Shiller. My time is up, I noticed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. How much time? Mr. Edelman, you have 2 minutes.
Your Honor, I don't believe it is any burden for a debt collector in the position of Pierce to obtain court approval. He has to go to court to dismiss the case. If he could easily have put in the final order, fee award is increased from $1,100 to whatever.
But Mr. Edelman, I saw nothing in your brief that specifically attacked the reasonableness of this fee. It seemed like it was a much more frontal attack on process without saying at the same time that this particular fee was an unreasonable fee.
We alleged that the fees were increased beyond the amount that the court allows for
right.
No additional work.
But why does that make it an unreasonable fee? Maybe it was a very preferential fee before.
Well,
I mean, anyway, I just didn't see the claim. You know, we think we need a refund of X dollars or something because, you know, suppose the fee had suddenly jumped from what it was before to $20,000 or some huge amount. I mean, I'm sure you would have been in there telling the state judge, this is an unreasonable fee. Set it aside, right?
Our position is that what Judge Schiller awarded is a reasonable fee. He liquidated it. They can't get any amount.
Forever. Even if they're more work, less work, the same amount of work, that was the only reasonable fee there could ever be?
No, we specifically say what he awarded it for and that no further work was performed. Less work was performed. I mean, it comes right out of the Fannie Mae schedule. It's for the entire case through confirmation of sale. It's done in this fashion because the sheriff has to be directed out of the proceeds what to pay to whom. And that's the fee for the entire case. As for the alleged burden, the only situation in which there isn't a court available to deal with this, with that is if there's some small expense involved in sending out a demand letter, something of that sort. If that doesn't produce results, the attorney will file a lawsuit, and there you have a court to determine it. It gets included in the judgment in every case so that it can be enforced. If the case is settled, then there's a specific agreement by stipulation as to what the fees are. What we have here, however, is just an exaction. She sells the property. She's between a rock and a hard place. She can't negate the sale because she'll be held liable for the deficiency. He's only asking for an amount which she would have to pay the attorney, an attorney in any event, to bring before Judge Schiller.
Thank you, Mr. Adelman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to both counsel.